Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about accomplishments. And I know that most of us have lots of good accomplishments that we're proud of, that we like to think about, and that we've used as good examples later on to show our experience, and later on in leadership and in group dynamic. Yes. So let's talk about accomplishments. Let's start out with really the basic question. And that is, why is it important to focus on accomplishments? Why do we do that? Why is it important to, it's because we don't like to brag, of course. I mean, bragging has no impact. It's not a good thing. So why is it that focusing on our accomplishments is a good thing? And not just a brag, not just kind of self-aggrandizement. Mm-hmm. So why is it a good thing? You know what, this is an interesting point, and thank you for all of your participation. I see we have lots of people. Thank you very much for being there and for listening and for participating. Let's see, Kirsty and a few others, quite a few actually, say that it's important to focus on accomplishments because it creates confidence that the group will be successful in reaching their present goal. Because actually, after all, accomplishments are in the past, right? That's something that you've already done. Creates confidence that the group will be successful in reaching their present goal. Yeah, we've done it in the past. The leader has done it in the past. Some of us have done it in the past. We have accomplishments. Therefore, we know how to do this. We're going to reach our goal successfully. We have confidence in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Mackenzie adds that it creates a positive attitude. Mm-hmm. And I might say a positive group dynamic too, right? Zoe and others are saying that also, that when you have a focus on accomplishments, we feel that we're getting somewhere, don't we? Yeah, and it creates a real positive attitude. In fact, Richard says it's encouraging to see how far we've come. And you know that really is the main thing about focusing on accomplishments. It's encouraging to see how far we've come. What we've accomplished, it's a real good thing. It's encouraging. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an interesting point, and we've talked about this in prior shows, and, of course, the last five are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows archived on the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And we've talked about self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, when you use the word self-fulfilling prophecy, people think of it with a negative connotation. But we thought of it also with a positive connotation. And if you focus on your accomplishments, quite a few people are saying what you've created is a self-fulfilling prophecy, a good one. It says that we will be able to accomplish our goal because we've done it in the past in a similar manner. Yeah, we're going to make it. And when you have that enthusiasm and that certainty of success in your heart, so to speak, it really is a self-fulfilling prophecy because you'll work towards what you know is going to happen, which is success. Mm-hmm. And that's how self-fulfilling prophecies work. If somebody tells you that you're never going to be able to do it, oh, my goodness, nobody can do that. See, that's a negative, and you'll think, well, if nobody can do it, perhaps I can't either. So you'll think that in your heart, right? But if everybody says, well, yeah, we've accomplished other things. We've come this far. We're going to go the distance. We're going to make it. Well, that's a positive self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. Because we're all certain that we're going to, and we're all working towards it, and we've got enthusiasm and passion, and the chances are much, much, much better, in fact, they're extremely good, that we are going to make it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we might have to modify something a little bit, but we're going to be successful. Very important, self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. In fact, Hansuki says that to focus on accomplishments encourages enthusiasm to have further accomplishments. What a good way of putting it. Focusing on accomplishments encourages enthusiasm to have further accomplishments. Wow, very good, very well put. Yeah, we can handle this. And then when we get these accomplishments under our belt, well, they'll serve us well the next time we want to do something, right? Right. So, now that we've discussed the fact that it's important and it is a valid and important thing to do, what accomplishments should we personally focus on as leaders? Mm-hmm. Let's start with us. Let's start with what kind of accomplishments should we focus on? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for all of your participation. Nara and others say that we should focus on positive experiences in similar situations. Mm-hmm. I've seen this before, and I know how to handle it. Positive experiences in similar situations. Good idea. Mm-hmm. Lane says, you know, we talk about the civility rules a lot on these programs. And Lane says, keeping the group civil is an accomplishment in itself. You know, I suppose it is. Because we want everybody to be negotiating, to be speaking with each other in a civil and an accommodating manner. Mm-hmm. And keeping the group civil is an accomplishment in and of itself because it takes the leader to say, no, we're going to not act in that way, maybe not in so many words, but in our actions and in our instructions. And we've had conversations like this before about the civility rules. But the leader is, of course, well, I don't want to say enforcer. Let's call us a referee. The leader is usually a third-party impartial. And we need to keep the group civil so that we can negotiate in good faith and make a workable solution. If we're really sniping at each other, we're not going to get a workable solution. We're not going to reach a proper negotiated compromise. Hmm? So I agree with Lane. Keeping the group civil is an accomplishment in itself. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to call this next group, because quite a few people have answered, and it's just lovely, that what the accomplishments we personally focus on as leaders, I'm going to call these leadership skills, because that's really what they are. They're actual how to do it leadership skills. And you know, we're a very practical show. We don't just talk about theory. We talk about the practicalities. And like keeping the group civil is itself an accomplishment. Yeah, it's a good point, Lane. And we talk about the practicalities and what to do. So these are skills that a lot of people are talking about that are really accomplishments that we should personally focus on as leaders. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it is an accomplishment, a wonderful accomplishment to be able to handle these things. I'm going to call them leadership skills. A lot of people are using the word organizational skill. And I take that to be very efficient and very time conscious and also to actually watch the details, right? Mm-hmm. Organizational skills are important leadership accomplishments. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have good organizational skills. That's an accomplishment in and of itself. and negotiation skills. Frederick says negotiation skills. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that it is important to have, to be, make confidence in the group that you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Now, Anna says, even if it's your first time, well, yes. You know, just because it's your first time doesn't mean that you lack confidence. Mm-hmm. And it really doesn't mean that you're unskilled. Because you've been studying it, you've been listening to this program, you've been watching, yeah. You don't have to actually be the third-party impartial for 30 years to be good at it. You have to watch and listen and learn, right? Right. So what other kind of leadership skills do we have? Len says patience with the process. Yes, a lot of times we underestimate, even now, you know, it's even after all these years of experience, it's easy to underestimate how long it'll take to reach a negotiated compromise because you're dealing with humans and you really don't know. So you have to have some patience with the process. And if the leader has patience with the process, then the followers will too, the participants will have patience. And they'll understand that we're not bogged down, that this is not taking too long. This is how it should be, so that we can get all the issues on the table, we can discuss them, can reach a negotiated compromise. Yeah, patience with the process. Mm-hmm. You know, Sarah and quite a few others are saying, if you're going to have patience with the process, you also need patience with the participants. Yeah. Patience with the participants, yes, because you never know how people are going to react to an idea, and you need to be able to hear them out. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons that we set some time limits for speaking, and we've discussed in prior shows how to enforce them, but it's important because you've got the participants want to have their say. They come in with a definite opinion about what they want and how it's going to look. We've all got that definite opinion, and they're all different. So you've got to have some compromise somewhere along the line and not just stick with that preconceived notion. Mm-hmm. What else do we need? Teresa and quite a few others are saying that we need listening skills. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to listen to what people are saying. We need to listen to whether or not there is implication in what is being said. You know, that's a very good point. Gwen and others are saying that sometimes, well, always really, when we listen and we you know, there's an expression in the United States called read between the lines. And I know this is a global show and it's kind of an Americanism, but it means you kind of get an implied meaning from what is being said. And if you just saw it on paper, it wouldn't have any kind of meaning, it would just be a grocery list. But it has implied meaning the way it's said. Mm-hmm. And that goes with the listening skills that are so important. Mm-hmm. You have to listen. You have to listen for the nuances. You have to listen to people's opinions. You have to see change, if they're kind of going from one opinion to the next, and find out why. Mm-hmm. Yes, excuse me. So, and here's a very good one that Freya and others are saying, and thank you for all of your participation, that as leaders, it's one of our great accomplishments is the ability to have empathy and understand all the sides, even if you don't agree. Mm-hmm. That's the ultimate accomplishment for a leader, for a leader of a negotiation, a workshop, a seminar, even a speech. That it's very, and also alternative dispute resolution and mediation, of course. But it's very important to have the ability to have empathy and understand all sides, but also understand that empathy does not mean that you're taking a side. Mm-mm. It means that you understand why someone holds that position and what it will take to work our way towards the middle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. very, very important. Thank you all for all your wonderful comments. So now let's go on to the next one. What group accomplishments should be emphasized? What kind of a group accomplishment? Mishti says that all of them, no matter how small. I love it. What group accomplishments should be emphasized? All of them, no matter how small. You know, it's a very good point. I actually am really quite fond of pointing out our accomplishments, because sometimes you get kind of like, oh, gee, I've lost patience with the process, like we just discussed. I've lost patience with the other participants, which we've also discussed just now. Yeah, those are very good, you know, accomplishments if you can hang out, if you can be neutral like that. So celebrate every accomplishment, all of them, no matter how small. I think that's important. People like, if somebody did the accomplishment, people like to stand up and be applauded. You don't have to pay them money or give them a gold watch or something. They just like to stand up and be applauded and that people acknowledge that they did good. Yeah, that they had an accomplishment. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a very human trait. And we're all humans. So all of them. Reina says that celebrating accomplishments together encourages team building. So true. Reina, and maybe others too. So celebrating accomplishments together encourages team building. Yes. And you've got to trust your team, right? And you have to think that they're pretty good and that you are pretty good too, and that we blend together nicely. So celebrating accomplishments, celebrating accomplishments together encourages team building. I think it does, yes. Jan says that when you're doing something that's taking a little while, the process is kind of dragging, and you are working together, but it's taking a while. That if you have acknowledged the group accomplishments, it keeps the momentum going, and it keeps you working together. If you see, it's just human nature. If you see that you're getting somewhere, you see that it's going all right, then you feel better about the whole process, right? Yeah, it gets momentum. It gains, you know, sometimes I say it gains legs, but it gains momentum. It gains interest. And sometimes something that you've really wanted to bring forward but is shelved, well, if you have your accomplishments and you've got team building and we're celebrating them, we could bring that up to the team, right? Right, yeah. And it keeps, as Jan says, the momentum, and it keeps you working together. Yeah, this momentum is very important. Oshan says that accomplishes in order, hello, the group accomplishments, hello, should be emphasized because it's positive steps towards the goal and it will speed the process. Yes, it will. If you're all working towards the goal and you're feeling positive about it and you're being efficient, it'll naturally speed the process. What happens is sometimes it truly shouldn't take so long, but it's hard to get people to move and to do their part because it's lagged. So it's a positive step towards the goal, and it will speed the process. Well, yeah, Vicky says it's an accomplishment each time you decide on the next step. You know, it's a very valid point. And it should be shown that we've moved further. It's an accomplishment each time you decide on a next step. Every time we decide to step forward, what is it? It's an accomplishment. Yes, we have reached a negotiated agreement of what we should do next. Can't get better than that. Yeah. It's an accomplishment to seek to each, the accomplishment each time you decide on a next step. Yes, very good. So, We've talked about what we're doing. We've talked about what accomplishments are. But how do we recognize and emphasize accomplishments? Remember, we're a practical show. And it's interesting to talk about accomplishments, but it might not exactly be on point, A. And B, pardon me, took a little sip of water there. And B, how do we recognize and emphasize accomplishments? How do we recognize it? Somebody's been working really hard. How do we show our appreciation? A lot of groups, the actual participants might be volunteers. I mean, they're probably getting paid by an employer, but they really didn't pay money for the seminar, the workshop, the mediation, whatever it is. Somebody else did. They've brought, for example, Recipe for Peace Now speakers in. So how do we recognize and emphasize accomplishments? Because we're not always the payer, the person, but we're the workers, we're the people who are doing it, we're the participants. Juanita says a timeline. And I think a lot of people are voting for timeline, and it's a very valid point. She says a timeline to show how far we've come and where we need to go. A timeline to show how far we've come and where we need to go. You know, people forget how far down they were in the, when the process is taking a little while. It's kind of like, wow, we're not getting anywhere. We're not moving. Well, the answer is yes, you are. It's just that you've forgotten how far away you were when you started. And that's why a timeline is very interesting. I think, you know, I'm afraid I'm going to say what you guys say I say all the time, and thank you for all of your participation. I'm going to say a little bit it depends, because if you're going to make a real formal timeline, we have to be at this spot by this time, by this date. If it's not actually designated by an outside reason, for a real reason for the date, for example, there's a vote coming up, there's an election or something, and you need to have things in place. You need to get on the ballot, you need to have the signatures, you know, you've got a whole bunch of stuff that has a deadline, a real serious deadline, not set by you. You know, sometimes it's called, yeah, people are saying a drop-dead deadline. I've never been all that fond of that phrase because I think it might be a little bit rude. But that's the idea. That means it's a kind of an Americanism, and I apologize. This is, of course, a global show. It means that you've got to. If you blow the deadline, if you don't make it, you can't go forward. You've become invalid. You just there's no place to go. Yeah. So sometimes there's a real serious timeline that must be met, and it's real good to make that very clear so that we all know we've got to get it in. But if it's a timeline that is an optimistic view of what's going to happen, I greatly approve, but it needs to sometimes be revisited. See, don't make a timeline if you're going to become so tied to it that you can't revisit unless you've got one of those outside deadlines. Yeah. So how else shall we acknowledge and express our gratitude for accomplishments? Yeah. For all the work that's being done. And how will we show where we've been, where we were, and where we're going? All good. And you know, we've got a lot of participation. Thank you very much, all of you, for being here. I'm going to call these visual representations. And I actually like a visual representation because it's simple. Everybody can glance at it. I actually leave it up in the room, if it's possible, like on a chart board or something, to show, wow, we're really getting somewhere. So visual, let's see. Samata and a lot of people are saying graphs. Well, you kind of chart, other people are saying charts, yeah. They're kind of very similar, where you chart your progress. You actually, it's easy to do on a computer nowadays. You know, years ago, a graph involved graph paper. Oh, that shows my age, doesn't it? Yes, dear friends, I also know what a compass is. But, you know, it involved lots of handwork, but now, a calculation, but now with computers, graphs not hard to do and neither is a chart. Do make sure that they make sense, though. I'm getting a lot of agreement. We've all been in situations where somebody hands us a graph or a chart, and which I'm going to use interchangeably word-wise, and it's pretty, and it looks nice, and they got a hold of the computer, and they did it. Any sense? Yeah, you got to be real careful about that. It got to be a visual representation of accomplishments, and not just something that people go, what is that? I like to make those kinds of things very clear, very really understand it easily. Visual representation. Hansuki says check off lists. Good point. That you have a list of things that need to be done and we're checking them off and we've done them, which is a wonderful feeling. This whole thing is to encourage enthusiasm, right? And I do believe that the favorite vote, and a lot of you are saying very similar things, and thank you very much for all of your participation. I think we look like the favorite vote is going to be the equivalent of a gold star, where people get a visual representation for their fulfilling their tasks, for example. Gold stars. You know, I suppose this shows my age, too, but maybe it's still done. In the past, people used a chart and an actual piece of paper and put a gold star on something, right, if you did a good job. And when we talk about gold stars in this context, we don't necessarily mean those little stick-em stars on a piece of paper. What we mean is some sort of a token of appreciation. A lot of times it's computerized nowadays, yeah, but a token of it, yeah. So that's for the group. What about the individuals? What about us? What about the other participants? What are the individual recognition of accomplishments ideas? How shall we show that? How shall we show that you have a great accomplishment and that we are impressed and grateful? Yeah, it was a very good thing. So individual recognition of accomplishments. No one and others are going for like an employee of the month type thing. You see that a lot. I see that in service industry jobs, but also in other kinds of jobs too, where there's some sort of a recognition that is traditional, that comes around at a certain frequency that can be depended upon, and you kind of put in for it, like employee of the month. And then, of course, we all know that this is, if someone becomes Employee of the Month, they get like a plaque, right? And it gets hung up somewhere so that everybody can see, wow, you were the 2010 Employee of the Month, and then it might even go to a higher thing, Employee of the Year, right? Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of common and effective. You know, there's nothing wrong with being common. It means that it's effective and it's tried and true and it's been done a gazillion times over and we're not going to make the wheel again. Yeah. So, Employee of the Month type recognition. Bobby says public announcement with a photo newsletter. Yeah. A lot of companies have newsletters, a lot of organizations. How about a nice announcement, a public announcement with a photo? That would be nice. It would keep us working, wouldn't it? Because we'd be quite grateful that we got to do such a thing. Yeah. You know, this is individual recognition of accomplishment. Some sort of an award, an actual tangible thing. I actually, you know, George and others are saying money incentive. Well, yeah, I think that's everybody's pretty much favorite incentive, to get some money, to get a little bit extra, to get a little bonus because you've worked so hard and you've gotten recognition of it. Yeah, so we have an award. Mm-hmm. Money incentive, very popular. Mm-hmm. Having an individual recognition of accomplishments. A lot of people, I'm going to call this thank you, that somebody says thank you to them. Mm-hmm. It's very important. It's often overlooked. Thank you is polite. I always thank you guys, you listeners, and I always thank you for being here, right? And at the very end of this show, I will thank you for having come and spent your time with me, because time is your most precious commodity, not your stuff, your time. You can replace your stuff. You can buy more. But time, you can't get back. So to thank someone, it's really important, individual recognition of accomplishment. The boss, the head person, somebody of influence, somebody of importance to the group should say thank you. Yes, very important, often overlooked. Mm-hmm. What else do we like? Yeah, this is an interesting point. Thank you for all of your participation, speaking of thank yous. Individual recognition of accomplishments could be priority for something desirable. Yeah, Ethan says that you could get something that really doesn't cost the company something like money, right? You could get a perk, a treat, and it would be a priority for your accomplishments, and then people would buy for it. And then you wouldn't have to take your kid to the playground and make them dirty, yes. So what kind of priority for something desirable have people seen? Mm-hmm. Oh, favorite one. We have a we have one that's very popular, I think mostly with the Americans, but with other people too. And thank you for all of your time and your effort, because you're giving me your time. The favorite so far, priority for something desirable as a recognition of accomplishment, a lot of people are saying parking spot. Mm-hmm. You get your own parking spot. You know, in Seattle, that's pretty much worth about the price of gold. And cars are heavy, so it's worth quite a bit of money. Yes, a perk, as we call it out here. Yeah, you get something, a priority for something desirable, a parking spot. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say first in line. Yeah, you get to go past all the crowds. You're first in line. Mm-hmm. Popular is desirable schedule, because if you have individual accomplishments and you're being recognized for them, then you should be able to pick your vacation days a little better, right? Right. A desirable schedule, a desirable vacation days. And basically speaking, promotion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Recognition of compliments, whether or not it's happened. I'm going to say basically promotion. Because it's very, very good thing. Yeah. Desirable schedule, a desirable vacation days. Mm-hmm. All good things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, priority for something desirable, promotion, schedule, vacation days, first in line, parking lot space, yeah, something desirable as a reward to work towards, yeah. You know, a lot of people are saying, Silvana says, the recognition as a team using media so that everyone can acknowledge your accomplishments. Recognition as a team using media so that everyone can acknowledge your accomplishments. Nowadays, of course, media means many things, and there's lots of free media out there, which is a wonderful thing. Yeah, recognition as a team. You know, the word team is very important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jason says cross-cultural communication. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's what we talk about lots, really, because cross-cultural does not necessarily mean a different ethnicity, so to speak. It can mean, look, We need to cross the boundaries between our corporate cultures. What an idea. Yeah. And, you know, a good way of really honing accomplishments and finding out about them, because some people are surprisingly shy. They really are. They don't like to talk about all the good things that they've done. A very good way is, of course, our networking. Well, I hate to use the word because it is overworked, but really getting together, and of course, it's also the food is a tool, really, because it's a tool to use when you need to have a timeout, when you need to get a little bit away from the negotiation and think things through. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's important to keep people in the room and talking to each other, which is why we use the food part. Mm-hmm. And I personally like a potluck. Sometimes people cater it. But it's very important if you're going to use food as a convivial atmosphere and to get people to stay in the room and really find something in common. Very important. Sometimes I even issue questions for people to ask each other just to get the talk flowing. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to use food, I'm going to about to say the thing that I say every single week. And I know a lot of you have heard it, and thank you very much for coming back. But it's very, very important that you take a survey as to whether there is some sort of food that someone cannot eat, whether religious prohibition, dietary prohibition, whatever it is, you don't want them to have a bad time. You must take the survey and then disseminate the information amongst all the participants. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, you will ask the participants to please label what they bring. Not what is it, but what's in it, so that I can run my eye down and see if it's something that I can eat. It's a very important and very basic thought, right? Right. So you're going to take the survey. You're going to have a list of ingredients. And also, I think it's just my personal opinion, but it's kind of important. I don't like to run out of food. I really don't. So I think that the leader, who's usually the host, should have some extra food so that we don't run out. And I also think that the leader should have at least one safe recipe. Now, what's a safe recipe? Well, we've taken our survey, right? So we know that pretty much everybody can eat it, although we're still going to say what's in it. We're going to label it. And it is not too many ingredients, and they are ingredients that my people here in my area would be familiar with. Now, what my people are familiar with and what your people are familiar with may be different, so you have to take that into account. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you can add chicken or meat or even shrimp to this kind of a recipe. You must label it and be very careful with the seafood, because a lot of people are allergic or have religious prohibitions. And then it would make it not a safe recipe. But the way I've got it as a base is a safe recipe. Not too many ingredients, and pretty much everybody can eat it. And if not, you've taken the survey, they'll tell you. Mm-hmm. So this is an herbed pasta. Let us get 2 pounds of pasta. Mm-hmm. I do not favor things like fettuccine and spaghetti. I like the ones that are solid pieces that you can spoon out with a spoon neatly and not splash your nice outfit with like you would with tongs. And it's neat in the room and it's neat on the people. So I really think you should get like shells or rotini or something. I favor rotini. So 2 pounds of that. Let's have 3 ounces of butter. 2 garlic cloves that we're going to crush. 2 tablespoons of chopped sage. Let's chop all of this nice and fine. Nowadays, of course, you can use a food processor, but give it a good whirl if you're going to do that. Nothing wrong with it. And we have the basil. We have the 2 tablespoons of finely chopped sage, 2 tablespoons of finely chopped basil, and 2 tablespoons of finely chopped oregano. Yeah. And that's it. You see, that's not too many ingredients. So We're going to, of course, boil our pasta, right, and make it al dente so it's not stuck together. And we're going to put aside. And while the pasta's cooking, we're going to melt the butter in a nice big frying pan. And we're going to, well, you know when you use butter and not oil, you melt it until it gets foamy. It's kind of like waiting for water to boil. It needs to be foamy. It'll make kind of a little white bubbly foam. Then you're done. So we've melted that. And we're going to add the whole thing, the garlic and the herbs. We're going to cook it around maybe a minute, right, until it smells wonderful and everything's kind of soft and like that. And we, you know, the garlic cloves, that's why they're crushed. Whisk it all around. Delicious. Remember those pastas? Well, let's put them back in the big pot, or else put the big pot on top of the pasta, whichever you like better. But you throw it into the sauce, the herbs, with a little bit of butter. You mix it all around, and you've got it. Such a simple recipe. Yes, you can make it ahead of time, not real far ahead of time, of course, but in case they don't have facilities. It's a very good one for that. Everybody likes it. And yes, people are saying you could spice it up, not literally, but make it more attractive by using tricolored rotini. I do indeed. Some of you have actually seen me, which is how you know. And thank you for being here. Yay. And I use tricolor. It's easy for me to come by. It's rotini shapes. It's spinach, tomato, and plain. It's just in the box mixed together, and it looks lovely, and that's just a little recommendation for the pasta. Yeah. So let's get on to our adventure recipe. Why is this an adventure recipe? It's basically vegetarian, unless you add something else to it. And the answer is because it has liquor. It has alcohol. And some people don't care if you tell them it burns off in the cooking process. They just don't want it. They've got it into their head. So we're going to have a fennel and tomato stew. You all know what fennel is. It comes in bulbs. Now, I don't know where you're buying your fennel, of course, but if you buy it from a farmer's market like I do, even though it looks clean on the outside, it needs to be very carefully taken apart because there's grit in between the slices, in between the leaves of the fennel. It's really leaves, yeah. So it needs to be washed extremely thoroughly. You cut it. You take out the actual core. You're all familiar with fennel. You wash it really good all in between, and then you slice it. So that's the fennel part. But let's talk about what the ingredients. I digressed on the fennel because I've seen it gritty, and it's just not a good idea. Let's have half a dozen. Let's have 6 tomatoes chopped if you're going to be a good person. If you're going to be me, like 6 small tomatoes, if you're going to be me, you're going to use a big can of diced tomatoes, and we're going to drain it. In fact, use 2 cans, use 2 16-ounce cans of diced tomatoes, drain them. If you want to go for the actual tomatoes and like that, you know, yours will come up better than mine. So let's have the 6 tomatoes, and I'm going to use a can. If not, you're going to chop them. And also take out the seedy part, too, for this. Let's have 3 garlic cloves, finely chopped. 1 really big fennel, or 2 kind of medium ones, that we're going to wash and halve and core and slice. Remember, the core is no good in fennel. You can't eat it. Did I say 3 garlic cloves, finely chopped? I think I did. 1/4 cup of oil, 1/4 cup of Perrinade. Notice that's a liquor. That's why this is an adventure recipe. Don't skimp on it. Do a different recipe if you don't like it. 2 bay leaves, which we're going to fish out, right? Let's have 2 pounds of potatoes that we're going to peel and cut into big chunks. And let's have a big can of chickpeas. I know. You want to use regular ones, you'll be better off. But I'm going to use the chickpeas out of a can. They're like a 16-ounce can. That must not only seriously be drained, because chickpeas are in slime. I don't know why. All those beans are in slime. It has to be seriously drained, and you have to run it under cold water to get rid of the shells, any shells that are loose, because otherwise they just look gross. And they're edible, but why bother? Mm-hmm. So we're going to have the chickpeas, drain them. We're going to have a cup of vegetable stock and a cup of dry white wine. Do not cook with anything you wouldn't drink in real life. Yeah, so don't just use garbage. It doesn't have to be the best wine, of course. Okay, so we've got the tomatoes, the garlic, the fennel that we've washed and sliced, right? We need a quarter of a cup of extra virgin olive oil, quarter of a cup of Perronade, all right, closer to half a cup, two bay leaves, two thyme sprigs, and we're down to the potato part. We need about 2 pounds of potatoes, which are going to peel and cut into large chunks. We've got our chickpeas, which we've drained, a cup of vegetable stock, and a cup of dry white wine. Oh, so good. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's preheat the oven to 350. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take our tomatoes, and let's get kind of a big baking dish. Our tomatoes, our garlic, our fennel, our oil, our Perronade, our bay leaves, and our thyme. And we're going to toss it all together. Now, in a perfect world, you would have a little bit of thyme to let this sit and kind of marinate together to marry the flavors. It's not exactly a big requirement, but it will make it a little more delicious because it'll all get kind of seep in. Okay, so let's toss them all together. Now we're going to cover the dish with a lid, and we're going to bake it for 30 minutes. That's the tomato, the garlic, the fennel, the oil, the Perronade, the spices, the bay leaves, and the thyme that we've tossed together. Cover it, put in the oven for half an hour. Now remove it from the oven, our nice sauce now, and add the potato, the beans, the stock, and the wine. We're going to mix it all together. We're going to take that lid, we're going to cover it right over again, and we're going to take it and cook it for about 45 minutes until the potato is cooked through is the key to it, because you want the potato to be not mushy, but to be edible, to be cooked through. And also remember to take the thyme and the bay leaves out. You've got to fish for them so that nobody gets them on their plate. And that, my friends, is our adventure recipe. It's an adventure recipe. Why? It's because of the wine, of course, and because of the liquor. I know people will tell me that it is not really alcoholic because it burns off. True, I'm sure, but people still feel that way about it, yes. And you know, last week we did a polenta bread, very popular recipe. I'm just going to mention this. And it is, and people ask about all kinds of ingredients to add to it. But it is true that the polenta bread itself is kind of like a cornbread in consistency. It doesn't have much taste. It's kind of a base for stuff. And people want to add herbs and chicken and vegetables and all kinds of stuff. And the answer is yes, of course, because these recipes are just general suggestions. But don't add anything wet. Mm-hmm. Because if you add something wet, it will fog out the recipe and it won't hold up. Mm-hmm. And we've been sending lots of emails to people going, don't add that, that's wet. Yeah, so add like raisins or something that are not going to turn and not going to be damp in the recipe. Anyway, so that's that. But I wanted to mention it on the air because we got so many interesting questions about that. And it's like, yeah, but don't add anything that's going to change the moisture level. That's the trick. You can't add like vegetables and chicken and things. You can add herbs. Okay, so that's just a little aside. So we have now had our safe recipe and our adventure recipe. And we've talked about our accomplishments, which are many. Mm-hmm. And I know this because we can think of lots. So our time together is nearly up. Oh, my, that went fast. Thank you. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. If you want to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website is recipeforpeacenow.com. If you'd like to hear prior shows, the last five are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived on the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.